My sobriety date is September 10th, 1986. If I don't take a drink for three more days, I'll celebrate 20 years of sobriety. Thank you very much. However, applauding a drunk for not drinking is like giving a rodeo cowboy a belt buckle for not riding a Brahma bull because he's got hemorrhoids. You see, the way I look at it now is that I'm doing pretty much every day what God intended for me to do. I just got a late start. I stayed drunk for about 23 years. So I've had a little bit of both lives, and I like this one better. My story is not a unique story. That's not why I'm here. I didn't throw up pearls or anything like that. And I don't much like talking about that side of myself. I remember an emotion that I could put a name, a word with for probably the first time in my life, and that was when I was checked in a detox center. I didn't even know what they were. And the detox doctor came by, and he was checking us out, I guess, to see if we were going to live or die. And I was shaking, and as he's taking my pulse, I said to the doctor, "You'll have to forgive me, I'm a little bit nervous." And he graciously said, "Yes, I know." What I said to the doctor and what I meant are two different things. What I meant to say was, I am so ashamed of what had become of my life. When I came here, it's not because my psychiatrist sent me, and it was not to save a marriage. And it wasn't to get a driver's license back. It wasn't to get a job. I was lonely, but I didn't know you would be my friend. I came here, ladies and gentlemen, because there was no place else to go. I had been all those other places. If this didn't work, I had some real concerns about where I was going next. So Bill Wilson described the progression of alcoholism in this textbook up here. In four words that pretty well sum it up for me, too. Gradually, things got worse. But the sad side of that gradually things got worse business is that it took 23 years to happen. I'm a gutter drunk bum. And I can be one in probably about 7 days again, should I pick up a drink. I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. There's no argument about that. In here, we do with God's grace, we do with the help of a fellowship and a program, we do get well. Honest to God, we really do. I've seen it happen. So there's no argument there. But, you know, when I was 16 years old and I borrowed my father's car for the first time, and he reluctantly gave it to me. I know why. He must have known something then that I didn't know. At 3 o'clock that morning, I was sneaking in my house, stealing my mother's perfume so that I could go out and splash it all over the inside of my father's car where my buddies had thrown up in it at 16 years old. Now, that should have given me a clue right there. Either my mother had to buy some more perfume, or I needed to start hanging around with different people, or maybe my drinking is going to cause me some problems. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. When I drank, I can't tell you it took care of problems, because in fact it created problems. But I thought it made me what I already was. It just enhanced it. And then a guy said, "Well, what if you're a dummy?" Makes you a bigger dummy, I guess. From 16 to 20 years old, I don't think I drank alcoholically. I don't think you could, you know, if I'd have filled out a questionnaire, I don't think I'd have failed it. I think I'd have passed it with flying. Of course, I could lie then, too. But as it turns out, I got married to my high school sweetheart, had two beautiful children. I have a daughter, and I have a son. and sometimes just stop drinking and getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't give back what we lost. I have a daughter who loves me and calls me every single day, called me a little while ago, in fact, and wished me well. Said, "You'll do good, Dad. Just go up there and tell them the truth." And you could hear a little sob in her voice. Because sometimes the truth for her still hurts. And then I have a son who is in California, and I spoke with him about 3 weeks ago, first time in 4 years. And he blames me for the way he is today. So there's little hope for him. And I do a heap of praying. Sad part in his life is that he's exactly like me. So someday, maybe, stand ready, folks. You may see a little Joe show up. If you do, please help him. When I don't need to go through all the losses and all the... All I can tell you is that things gradually got worse, first materialistically, and then other ways. It takes a long time to walk through life at 38 years old taking two steps forward and one back. It takes a long time to do that. I mean, even if you're not a drunk. But being a drunk, when I was on my step backwards, I'd create another mess going that way too. So I was behind the eight ball in a jackpot, I think we call it, most all of my life. I became a good liar because you have to be if you drank like I did. You don't have a choice. I was honestly being dishonest. I really was. I meant everything I said. I really did. But I just couldn't stay the course. I just couldn't do anything about it. The first wife left. And that's when those two children became mine, when she left with them. Because there were lots of nights that they didn't see their father at all. He was at the bar playing big shot, spending Christmas bonus money on my buddies with rounds of drinks while my children were home wondering if Santa Claus was going to come. My wife's in bed scared to death. You know, today in Alcoholics Anonymous and all these people, this would be about the only room I know I could go in and share that with and get a little chuckle. And I know why. Because if we didn't laugh about some of that tragedy, surely we'd cry. Very sad state of affairs. But she stayed with me. They always do. I had a pigeon ask me once, "Joe, why do we always hurt the ones that love us the most?" And the answer is very simple. They're the only ones that'll let us. She had hope when all hope was gone. She had more hope for me than I ever had. She had more hope for me than society had, the judges had. Tomorrow it's going to be different because he said it was. And I hope it is. And it got different. It just got a little worse. Finally, she had some probably coercion with her parents and whatnot. And away she went with my children. And, of course, now I've got a resentment. I didn't know what they were then. And I hung on to that for 20 years. And it almost killed me. She was the reason I was like I was. And I really didn't know what I was taught. I didn't know, like, what is it that I am? I just drink a little bit. I mean, I'm a great... I could oblige myself with anything I wanted to say and believe it. And when you didn't, I became very angry at you. This first wife, I had her that close to going to see a psychiatrist. Now, ladies and gentlemen, she's hanging in there for the course, isn't she? She has hope and all hope was lost. She's gone, and I'm out drinking now, and it's, you know, after all, now I'm free. I'm single. I have no responsibilities. Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't have any responsibilities before. I wasn't much of a father or a husband. Somehow I never was arrested for disorderly conduct. Somewhere, always, the cops would write drunk and disorderly. Now, that should give you a little sign, but I never got to see the paperwork, so. And as it progressed, and it did, it's a tragedy that when you wake up in the morning and you're in a cell somewhere and you have to wait for the policeman to come to the cell, to say, good morning, sunshine. So you can look at his or her badge or her arm patch or his arm patch to see what town you're in. Do you see what I'm talking about, how we laugh about that? Normal people don't live like that. That's the way I lived. So we get out of one jackpot and get into two more, and it just progressed down. Hadn't seen my children in years. Child support was a joke. How you get child support out of a drunk? A roaming drunk. It's a tragedy is what it is for my children and my wives and the people I hurt, my mother. My father didn't have to see any of this because shortly after the perfume issue, he was diagnosed with cancer and passed away when I was 16 years old. So he was spared the embarrassment of a drunk son. But my mother was not. These people were good folks. My dad was a hard worker. My mom worked by his side. They sent my sister and I to school with lunch money every day. I could tell you where my father was if I had a watch. I knew exactly what he was doing. He had some values and virtues that were good. I know because I saw him. I lived with him. I know what they were. I just couldn't get there, ladies and gentlemen. I had to stop by the bar and have one with my boys. One. I stopped in and have one. I worked all day. I deserve it. What's wrong with that? And you know what she's going to do when I get home anyway. I might just well stay and have three or four. I don't know. You do that long enough, you believe it. And then the next morning, when you wake up, you do that and wake up at the same address until the address changes. That's what happens. That's what happened to me. I'm going to rush through this because I want to spend time on the good side of this thing. Ladies and gentlemen, I lost two houses on the same street in Dover, Delaware. Two houses on the same street. Can you believe that? I lost more houses than that, but I lost two on the same street. The second of the two on the same street, I was in the house on the couch, passed out, and they were having an auction out front. There was always a tremendous amount of stress in my life. Those were some of the external things, you know, that I lost. We're great waivers. We wave goodbye to everything, just about everything. Kids hadn't talked to me, didn't know where I was. I didn't know where they were. Of course, my ex-wife, she's hoping she never sees me again. DUIs, Morris and I were talking about that earlier. Everybody gets a DUI, is not an alcoholic. That's for sure. I got two of them, and I am one. That's all I need to know. But, you know, I was non-compliant. I had some, what's it called, antisocial behavior going on or something. And I didn't even know it. I never went and got a license. I think I found out quickly, you only need a license when you get stopped. And I could play the numbers a little bit, and it rarely happened. So I'll deal with it when it happens. And that's what I did. I didn't have a driver's license in the state of Delaware for 14 years. And in 14 years, I owned 22 cars. And the reason I own 22 cars is because I can't get them inspected. They don't have insurance, and when the tag expires, the car goes to the junkyard. So my concern is not how many miles it has on it or how much are the payments or is it the right color. It's how many more months do you have on that sticker? Because I'm not changing it over in my name. I can't. And I'm tired of walking. And that's not the way my father did it. I never saw my dad do that. I don't know what happened. What does the book, our book talks about our descent downward as pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. That's a dressed up bunch of words for a gutter, drunk, useless piece of crap. And that's what I was. But you know, I hung on. I'm very thankful that I, that my bottom was where it was, because had it been any higher, I would have drank again. And I'm almost certain, had it been any lower, I wouldn't be here today. I believe that we have a window of opportunity to get sober. And I'll tell you when it is. I don't know how long it is. It's right after our last drink and just before permanent insanity or death. And I don't know whether that's a week, a month, or 20 years. But that's the window of opportunity that we have to get sober. And thank God when that time came, everything was in place. They wrote it down for a guy like me. And then they put some people in front of that literature who had read the literature and put it in their lives. So I not only could read about it, I could see it. Proof positive. All doubt was taken away. Here are some of the things that I lost that you can't buy with money. Human dignity. Freedom. Not jailhouse freedom. Freedom from inside. The things that God gave me at birth and that I bargained with and bartered with and lost. Now, when you wake up and you're 38 years old, you can't even kill yourself because the vacuum cleaner hose is that much short of making that back window. Isn't that something? Can't even kill myself. Isn't it a shame that when you wake up in the morning, you don't thank God for another day? You almost cuss him, thinking you got to go through another day. My drinking, at the end of my drinking after 23 years, the last 15 years of it I drank daily, and the last 10 or 7 of that was horrible. I've lost months. That would scare the average person to death. And it scared me to death when I got sober. I was physically beat up. I hadn't had nutrition. I couldn't eat. Personal hygiene was out the window. I could empty this room. I was an empty shell of a human being is what I was. You could look right through my eyes, right into my eyes, and you could see the spiritual rot that occurs when you're a page 21 drunk like I was. I'm a real alcoholic, and it ain't getting no better. And I don't even care anymore. So, as it turns out, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous September 10th, 1986. And I don't know, there's a few people older than I am in here now. And the little brown bags that the Acme Market used to give you with the waxed handles, they gave you those bags to carry canned goods in because the bottoms would fall out the others. I had one of those bags. I was real proud of it. That was my luggage. And I kept it. I'm glad it had those handles on it, too, because it kept me from losing it. Everything I owned was in that brown paper bag. I was 38 years old. I was homeless. I was helpless, full of guilt and shame. I was useless. And more importantly, I was scared to death. I'll never be able to stand here and put a word on that fear. I was afraid to live, and I was afraid to die. I knew my problem was alcohol. I knew my problem was I drink too much. But I didn't know I was an alcoholic. Further, if I had known that, I didn't know what to do about it. Because my experience in my neighborhood with alcoholics were down there. And they would walk in front of my house on the way to the package store, and they would walk back. And my father would say, "That poor soul." I turned out to be that poor soul. A gutter drunk bum. If you were sitting next to me at 1 o'clock in the morning, guess whose couch I'm sleeping on? Or porch. Or under anywhere I could get. So, I don't know exactly how or why, but what it is, what we call it in here, is a divine intervention. Not a crisis intervention, folks. That's what the police try to do for you and the Salvation Army and whatever's out there to help a drunk get off the street so he don't freeze to death in December. What happened to me was a crisis intervention. It had to be the hand of God that got me where I was. And where I was in a 5x7 cell in the Delaware State Hospital. Now, there's a novel idea. If you've never been there, you ought to try that once. I know none of you have ever been in a mental institution, but trust me on this one. I fell to my knees and I made a surrender. I made an appeal to God in there. And I had never seen Alcoholics and I never attended Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't know anything about 12 steps. I said, God, I quit. I can't do this anymore. That's all. No big deal. It was no big deal. No parade. The warden or the administrator of the Nut Hut didn't come over and witness it or anything like that. I just laid there on that steel bed and I thought, you know, if I live, if God sees fit to get me out of here alive, I'm going to make some changes. And I really wasn't sure what they were going to be, but I was going to change something. And as it funneled itself out, at the door I came with that brown paper bag. Everything I owned was in it. And then I met Bill. I would be remiss, ladies and gentlemen, to stand up here and tell you that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and that I have recovered without mentioning sponsorship. That is the missing link today. Sponsorship. I met Bill. Bill was my sponsor. He told me he was my sponsor. That's how he was my sponsor. He told me he was. And how he became my sponsor was kind of interesting, too. I didn't know how they did it. And he told me that they drew straws and he lost. And I didn't know the importance of that either. But nonetheless, Bill was my sponsor. And Bill didn't waste much time with me. I had taken the first two steps in that mental institution and didn't even know it. There's no action there. You just almost have to die, drink yourself to death. And then just whatever happens, a moment of clarity, that's a real nice way of saying, I came to or something. And I said, geez, I got to do something. I quit. And I was coming to believe then. I didn't know it. Second steps talks about came to believe. When I got here, I wasn't a real big believer. I'll tell you that right now. I believed you could do it because I saw you. But I wasn't sure it was going to work for me, and I was scared to death of that. I really was. I was very scared. So Bill and I, we began this wonderful journey down the 12-step rocky road. And I didn't have time to argue or to debate. I wasn't sent to the third step meeting for 6 months and then we'll come back and talk about it. That's not what happened. I believe that Bill must have written these steps because that's all we talked about. Recovery. He talked about my wife. I had another wife by that time, by the way. I got another one. Actually, I have 6 or 8 girlfriends right now. 7 of them don't even know it yet, and the one that does don't want to be. Bill got on his knees. He was a big, rusty guy. He had been at sea. He was a merchant marine. He had been at sea for 20 years. He looked much like I did, only bigger and uglier. And he was older. And that man got on his knees and began to pray with me. And I'll tell you, that was a spiritual experience. A spiritual awakening experience. A big man on his knees praying with a drunk like me. A little bum. He cared more about me than I'll ever be able to tell you. But I didn't think he liked me. He was rude. And he cursed me. And I was hearing about the love in the rooms. And then I'd go talk to Bill. And there was a conflict going on in my head. Where was the love? I wasn't sure. I know today that God got Bill sober in Alcoholics Anonymous to stand ready for a jerk like me. I know that. I know that. No one else could have talked to me the way he did and got away with it. Nobody except Bill. People have tried, and I just walk away. But Bill, I stood still and listened. I don't know why. He used to tell me that he got paid the 1st and the 15th. That's what he told me. And he said, if I wanted what he had, come on. But he's not chasing anybody. He's too old. And he got, I don't know what the first and the 15th, I don't know the significance of that at the time, but I believe he was saying, he's going to get paid and go right on with his life with or without me. I believe that's what he was saying. When we went to our first AA meeting, there are people in this room that were at my first AA meeting. I see one back there now. I just saw him. Bill told me to go to the front of the building, the front of the room, and sit down and shut up. That's all. And I understood that. I know what that means. Sit down and shut up. That's what I did. I went there and sat down and shut up. I wanted to say something. I really did. But I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to embarrass myself or Bill. And I surely would have had Bill not been there. He said, if they do call on you, it'll be just a freak thing. And if they do, tell them your name and tell them you're an alcoholic. And tell them you ain't real sure about both of them. And sit down. Because you told them everything you know. And that's the kind of relationship that we had. And I'm glad. I'm not complaining. I'm glad. Because he was sober. He was sober and he knew what was in that book. We took that third step on our knees, that prayer, and I went home and I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that that man would do something like that in front of me, or with me, or because of me. I wasn't sure why he was doing it. I took these steps. What I'm going to stand here and tell you about the taking of these steps is all an after deal. I didn't know what I was doing when I did it. I really didn't. So if you're going to wait for the fog to lift to take a step, hoo-hoo. It may never lift, and I don't know. The fourth step he told me that we were going to do, I said, what's that? If that's where we're going to take an inventory. See, you made an appeal to God, and you're coming to believe that higher, you're powerless, so you need some power. We're giving you some power here. You're coming along with that power a little bit. You've agreed to go on with this thing, and this thing he was talking about were the rest of these steps, the program. Not 90 and 90. He never told me to go to 90 and 90 in his life. Because I'd have went to 2 a day for 45 days. I was becoming a pretty sharp tack. He said, you want to go on with this thing? And I said, yes. Good. Fourth step. Boom. Wait a minute, Bill, I need time to catch my breath. Well, you hadn't done anything yet. All you did was almost drink yourself to death and come in here and ask for help, and I'm trying to give it to you, and you got a better idea. You're using that organ that almost killed you. And he told me that all the time. So the fourth step we did. I didn't have time to be afraid of it. I didn't know what it was. And that's the truth. And had I known what it was, I don't think I would have been afraid of it. Because what I know about this today is it's God-given, and God doesn't scare me. Boy, it gives me a lot of comfort, I'll tell you. Because God's doing for me right now what I can't do for myself. So, we did that fourth step. Resentments, fears, sex conduct. Yeah, sex conduct. Not the kind you think. Emotional sex conduct. If it was the other kind, I'd have used a whole page. As it was, I just used a half a page. And Bill had to help write that for me because I couldn't write. Is that any indication of the damage done from hard drinking for a couple of decades? I couldn't write something down today and look at it tomorrow and tell you what it said. I could tell you what it said today while I was writing, but I couldn't tell you tomorrow because you couldn't read it. I have grandchildren who can write better than that. So Bill helped me with that. We didn't have a pause. I don't think we had a pause between the fourth and fifth step. We went right to the fifth step. I shared with Bill. Bill shared with me. It was no big deal. I wasn't afraid of anything. God was there. And Bill was there. And I did that fifth step. Big deal. I'll tell you what the big deal happened in the fifth step for me was. You know, at the end of this process that we're taking these steps, well, something's supposed to happen. Something's supposed to happen. So I won't be me. And you know what? It was beginning to happen at that fifth step. Because I had had some spiritual ideas. I mean, you know, I thought about what it might be, but I felt it at that fifth step level. I think I started feeling like maybe, just maybe, you know, I'm going to be all right. I hope Bill didn't pull out on me. He told me to go home and be sure I had done up to that point everything as honestly and as thorough as I could, because there's no sense going any further. And of course, that scared me to death. I was so full of fear that I wasn't doing it right. I went home, and you know, this is going to probably astound some of you. It did me when I found it. He said, go to home and review those first five proposals. He used that word, proposal. He'd never said that before to me. And I opened this book up. Well, not this one, an older one. And you know that word proposal is right in there at that fifth step spot. And I began to read a little more, and I backtracked, and I was reading a little bit more. And you know, I was reading things in there that Bill was telling me. And I was fine. A bell went off. You know, this is where Bill's getting his information, right out of his book. And to tell you the truth, I was a little disappointed. I never have. I never shared that with Bill to this day, and he's not with us anymore, but he never knew that. So I just pretended I didn't know where he was getting his information. The sixth and seventh step. Have you ever heard anybody in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting say, I have identified my shortcomings, but I want to keep them? I have. Or I just want to keep those two. And they seem to be the worst two. I can't for the life of me figure out why anybody would do that. I was so ready and willing to get rid of these things. I want it done now. Yes, I'm ready. I know what they are. I have cleaned the house that God's going to come live in. Why in the world do I want to keep the things that are going to block me from Him? And if that happens, surely I'm going to drink again, and I'm scared to death. Now, this is all happening in a matter of 6 months. I mean, we didn't have any hiatus time. I didn't have a vacation time. I didn't get to go to the Alps and ski and come back. And we stayed right the course here. And thank God we did. I went to a meeting in Dover, chapter to the agnostic in the book. I didn't know what an agnostic was, but I thought this was kind of nice. And they were talking to me, and there were some pretty girls in there, and the pretty girls were talking about being agnostic, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I ought to be one of them. So I get home by 9:45, and now Bill lives in Newcastle County, which is the northern end of Delaware, and I'm all pumped up. I want to talk to him about this thing, because I might very well be an agnostic, you know, and that's important he know that. So I should have never done this. I called my friend Bill, and I said, Bill, and a sigh, one of those. I woke him up. I know I did. I said, you know, I just left a meeting in Dover, and the topic of the meeting was agnostic. And Bill, I think I am one. Phone went dead. He said, well, I guess what you're going to have to do, and I want you to do it before you go to sleep tonight, is you're going to figure out if you want to be a drunk agnostic or a sober agnostic. See, there was no game playing going on. Remember, I came to you bagging baggage, and now I'm looking for a way out. Another little incident with Bill. What's this business about being halfway through? What are we supposed to do? Yeah, I called Bill up. I said, Bill, I ain't these things. He says, you ain't halfway through. It's amazing to me. And I've had an opportunity. I've been sober long enough now to work with others. It's amazing. I didn't understand when Bill said, son, you're helping me much more than I could ever help you. I had no idea what he meant. I thought, well, actually, I thought like every other alcoholic. Jeez, ain't I great? He probably does need some help. thing. So we got on that seventh step. Here again, Bill's praying with me. I wanted to tell Bill that I heard, I was scared. I was scared of Bill, actually, to tell you the truth. I was scared. I mean, he intimidated me. He kept me humble, I think. I think that's what he was doing. I hope, because it worked. We get well too quick sometimes in here. You know, you get to get her back and get the toilet paper on a roll and you get some running water and before you know it, you got a little car and and along comes her and, you know, here we go. He tried to keep me sick long enough to get well. I think that's what he was doing. And it worked out okay. That's what happened. So most of what I do here in Alcoholics Anonymous is I can only give to you the way it was given to me. It's the only way I know. And it was rough around the edges coming, but I'll tell you what, it has gone full circle. The eighth step, I had the list from the fourth step. Ninth step, I don't know why anybody would have any problem with that. I really don't know. And I'm talking now from experience. This is not something I'm thinking up. This is actual experience. And that's what works best for us. Let somebody else go do it. If it works, we'll do it. I always wanted to be a good father. I always wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to be a good... I knew what it looked like. I had a good example, my father. I wanted to be like my father was. I never quite got there. I always wanted to start afresh with everybody. I wanted to stop saying I'm sorry. I wanted to do something else. Come up with another word for me. Because this I'm sorry, they've heard that. They ain't going for that. I was eager to get started on that amends-making deal. It's an open-ended deal. It's never over for me. It's going to last the rest of my life. I have never had anybody tell me, "Geez, Joe, I'm so sorry to hear you got sober. You were such a wonderful guy drunk." Nobody ever said that. Nobody. In fact, the sadness of it all is I was the last one to know how sick I was. All the people that I made amends to had known it for years. It was no surprise to them. They were delighted that I finally caught on. So the amends-making deal for me was good. And it seems like when we talk about making amends, we go right directly to the wife or right directly to the husband. I'm standing here telling you I'm ready to stay right with the world for as long as I'm on it. So it doesn't make any difference who it is. I don't care. Because it makes me feel good. I always wanted to be able to do that. I always wanted to have a way to say, "See that, Dad? Now I'm getting a little closer. Now I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing." I always wanted to be able to do that. My ex-wife, the woman I hated, believe it or not, we can talk. We can sit right down there side by side. You would think that we were friends or something. It's amazing what this thing can do. The power that's involved here that we can't even see. You just stay the course, you'll feel it. I've had an opportunity to do all those things. I wish I could see what time it was.
9:24.
The 10th step, I don't know if they're maintenance steps or not. That's what I do. 10th, 11th, and 12th. I do that every day. I do that every day. 5 directives in the book for the 10th step. Here's some hot stuff about that 10th step I really liked. It caught my attention. Number one, the problem will be removed. Sanity will return. Huh? That stuff's good. That's good stuff. I like that. That was appealing. So I wanted those things. And guess what? Here's the kicker. Here's the best one of all. The will that I resigned in the third step, I've never taken that back. I got it back from God at the end of that 10th step. Talks about it in the book. Tells us our will will be given back to us a new direction and meaning. I know what that means, but I didn't know when I was doing it. I didn't think there was anything wrong with my will, direction, or meaning when I gave it up. I just did what Bill said. Follow directions and keep it simple. You don't have to say that other thing. Everybody knows it. So that's what happened. Sanity had returned. Not the blah, 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 blah. Picking gnats out of the air is insanity. But I can walk down the street, so as you'd never know, I probably was in a ditch 9 months ago. I was taking a shower. I was treating people a little better. The 11th step, prayer and meditation, that's a big one for me. That's a big one. Prayer and meditation, oh, by the way, there's no work involved in these steps. I wish those of you who are working them would stop and start practicing them in your life. It would be a lot easier and joyful for you and those around you, probably. I never worked a step in my life. Prayer and meditation, listening and talking to God. I can do that anywhere. I did that on the way over here. You can believe that. And the joy of it all. Here it is in a nutshell. Here it is for a drunk like me in a nutshell. God reaches down and pulls a gutter drunk bum, a useless piece of crap, out of a ditch. Scared to death. And in a relatively short order, returns that specimen to sanity, gives him a new direction and a new meaning. Oh, by the way, this is happening, and I ain't sure. I don't know. I didn't feel it. I don't know what happened. I mean, it wasn't coming in increments. Nobody was sending me postcards. New direction and new meaning. And now I've got the ability to help another human being. I've got the ability and been given the privilege to do that. Isn't that remarkable? You wouldn't have walked across the street with me 9 months before what I'm talking about happened. There's no way, because if a car's coming, I'm running. You're on your own. So we practice the principles in all our affairs. I used to think that was so corny. How do you do that? What is a principle? The principles are the opposite of the defects of character identified in my fourth step. If I'm dishonest, be honest. It's very simple stuff. If I'm full of hate and discord, try to get some serenity and peace. If I want to be understood, try to be understanding. You want to be loved? Start loving somebody. All those kinds of silly, stupid girl things. Yeah, girl things. I hadn't heard love since I was in love. I used to be in love a lot. I think it was lust. He takes a drunk like me and puts me on earth after he has revived me and turns me loose on you. Isn't that something? The sickest of the sick. I read that somewhere in another book. Ooh, scary stuff. I've only been a very short time in the 20 years, almost short of 3 days, that I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous without a pigeon or two or three or four. Only a relatively short period of time. I believe, because I've experienced it, that, you know, if you want immunity against that next drink, intensive work with another alcoholic will do it. So I try to find somebody with fresh puke on them at every chance, at every corner, everywhere I go. I really do. I really, really do. Here are the principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you took those principles and if you poured them in the top of a funnel, and when they came out the other end of that little hole in the bottom of that funnel, what it would mean as it's transposed itself in my life would be simply to care more about you than I do me. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for average, normal to run folks, that's an easy job. But for a guy like me, I'll spend the rest of my life trying to do that. Some days I do it better than others. But I always, always ask for his will every morning. And I have been given that. You know how I know? Because I woke up sober this morning, way away from my house. I could have drank. Nobody would have known. But I didn't think about that. I thought maybe, just maybe, I hope to God I say something here tonight to help somebody. That's so out of character for a guy like me, isn't it? I have had an opportunity to live two lives in one lifetime. If there's anybody here tonight that thinks maybe this won't work for them, stay around after a while. Find these people with shiny eyes that look and smell clean and ask them what they're doing. They'll tell you because they need you. And if you don't think God will help you, just ask Him. Just ask Him. Thank you for listening. Good night and God bless.